One of the things I've realized is that people don't find churches the way they used to 5, 10, and certainly not 20 years ago. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about some things that have changed about how people are finding the churches they're visiting and what you can do to make sure you're reaching the most people possible. Let's do this. You're listening to the Reach Right Podcast, the show dedicated to helping your church reach more people and grow. Well, hey guys, I'm Thomas.
And I'm Ian.
And today we're talking about why visitors aren't finding your church the same way that they used to and what you can actually do about it. So yeah. I'm looking forward to this because I have seen this so clearly that the way that people find a church is different from in the last 10 years. Certainly in the last 20 years, we've seen a huge change in that. So Ian, you and I have been helping churches see more visitors since 2006, 2007, that time frame, right? So that's been like nearly 20 years at this point that we've been in this world of helping churches reach more people and grow. That's kind of our vision and what we do here at Reach Right.
Absolutely.
And, super important to us. So like, it just, it's comical to think about how different the things that we people did in 2006 and 2007 to what we do today. Like back then, the primary way that like most churches got more people engaged with them is they sent out mass mailers.
Yeah.
They put ads in newspapers. They had ads in the yellow pages. They had like the really big successful churches had TV commercials or maybe TV shows. They put their sermons on Sundays or something. Yeah. That was the paradigm. And now like literally, like those are some of the worst things I think you could be doing to get the word out there about your church. You know, we did a episode once where we did kind of a church marketing tier list where we kind of rated each marketing channel and platform. And I'll leave a link to that up here in this corner if you're watching online or down in the description. But I think it's just radically different. So we want to talk a little bit about what's different and how it's changed. And I think it should be a good conversation.
Yeah, I think so, too. It not just to be informative for what's working now, but just to brush up. I think a lot of pastors out there, we work with a lot of pastors that do know a lot about these things and are doing it. And I think it's always helpful to just have a refresher to make sure you're staying current. Not just up with the trends, so to speak, but that you are visible where people are looking and getting in front of them engaging them. So, yeah, should be fun,
Ian,
Thomas.
Let me ask you a question. Like, so when you, I know I've heard your testimony and things many times, and we don't need to get into your whole testimony here or anything.
Sure.
But how did you, like, do you remember how you found out about churches that you started going to? Like, I know you went to like a Catholic church. It was your first attempt, right?
Well, I'll be short with this. Even it's easy to get lengthy with that, but I appreciate you asking that. So I had, I guess, what some would refer to a radical conversion. I had some dark spiritual experiences, some stuff, quite frankly, that was demonic going on that terrified me. And I was unchurched, as you know. I didn't grow up in a churched household. Parents were not in church, didn't have any sort of Christian upbringing. So the reason I went to that Catholic church, Thomas, because I grew up on lovely movies like The Exorcist, that basically if something demonic happened, you go see a priest.
That's so, really Catholic church branding 101 is The Exorcist. That's how they do their marketing.
If something like that happens, you automatically go to the Catholic priest. Well, it turns out this guy didn't know how to handle me. So I found the church that I was actually saved at and came to faith at was a Baptist church that just so happened to be down the road from where I grew up. And I actually was taken by some neighbors to their vacation Bible school. And I happened to vandalize the church when I was
when
younger.
When you were a kid?
I was a kid. So I ended up how God turns what's meant for evil, he turns to good. But that's how I found it, you know, from...
How did you know to go to, like, just from, like, being aware and driving by and vandalism when you're younger years, that's how you...
Driving
by... It wasn't the Catholic church, but you chose that one.
No, and it was a Baptist church. So it was a Baptist church that I was actually saved at, but... because the Catholic priest didn't know what to do with me and the story that I told him and everything, that happened to be the next one right down the road from
down
me.
The road,
was the Baptist
one. Let's try the Baptist.
So it was location and just knowing, growing up, knowing some people that went there, And I knew that in my mind, probably then, it was a Bible thumping church. So I knew that they, so I was like, well, maybe the Bible has some answers for what I'm experiencing here. That's kind of what did it. So
love it. That's good stuff. Yep. For me, I've been in ministry, and the only time I was out of ministry for a season was shortly after we planted a church, and, we stepped back from that, and we wound up going to the church you go to now, Ian, actually. We went there for 6 or 9 months, and I will say that the reason I knew it is because of their big billboard that they had out on the street back in 2006 or 7 when I first saw it. I think it was a big billboard that was out there. So, you know, those things used to work, and I'm sorry I don't have any anecdotes from finding churches recently for us. We have been engaged in our churches for a while, but
that's right.
We've seen evidence that it's different now, and so that's what we're going to get into today. I think we have eight things that we see that churches are doing that actually work right now to help people find your church. So why don't you kick us off with those, Ian?
Speaking of the church parking lot that I walked to and through to go talk to a Baptist minister, it's not there. People start with Google now. Didn't have Google back then to help me with that. So people are starting with Google.
Yeah, they type in exorcism near me, right?
That's right. Catholic priest exorcisms near me. Discount exorcisms near me. So, but but yeah, absolutely. That's where people start. They're doing an online search, and Google's still the main one they use, right? Even in the age of, well, there's other search engines, and we have AI now coming into, not coming in, has been in the picture, but that is still the main search engine people use.
Yeah. Well, so I'll say a couple things about this. I think that, yes, they're typing in things like churches near me. And that's, I think that's 101 of what most churches are trying to rank for, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yes, that's where probably people that are looking for churches, that's the best possible search. In the world of marketing, we have this concept of like the marketing funnel, and there's different levels of search terms, right? So when someone's typing in churches near me, you know they're probably looking for something that a church can do for them. So that would be what we'd call bottom of the funnel, someone that's ready to make a decision about finding a church that they want to go to.
Yeah.
But then there's other levels of the funnel, like so there's the middle of the funnel or like the top of the funnel, which is people that are maybe they are not aware that they want to be in a church or that they need a church or a church would be healthy for them or meeting Jesus would be a good thing for them. And they're typing in different kinds of things like you did. Like, so, I mean, like you didn't, but you would nowadays would if you were looking for an exorcism or you're like, you're maybe doing searches like, you know, why did
to
I feel
clear,
the way that I
didn't get an exorcism, just so people, both watchers know.
That's just what your experience was, right?
In the like. I needed deliverance, that's for sure.
But so. I mean, I think people would search for this or maybe, you know, honestly, you mentioned this kind of in passing. I think, and this is a whole nother episode to do, the more people, especially younger people, are doing this same search in something like ChatGPT right now or an AI tool to get answers. And so there's lots of content we're making about how to rank in those kinds of areas.
Yep.
But targeting kind of middle of the funnel topic. So what if your church wrote an article about, you know, demonic spirits and what the Bible has to say about them? That's biblical stuff. Jesus spends a lot of time. We're preaching through Matthew right now at my church, going into these things about Jesus casting out demons in places. What does the Bible say about it?
Yep.
What does it mean for today? Having your theology in there. If you can rank for those kinds of things in your community, Google will start to recommend your content to someone that's looking for, you know, answers on these kinds of spiritual questions. They haven't decided they want to go to church yet, but they know that they have a challenge or a problem that they're looking for help with. They don't know what really how to solve it just yet. So that's where that is. When people are starting on Google, that's what we need to be thinking about. So I will say this, we do offer a full audit of where your church ranks in local search engine searches.
Yep.
So kind of if someone searches, whether on Google Maps or in a regular Google search, where do you show up on that? Totally free to you. Just put in your church name. The system will do all the rest. It'll generate a report and send it to you. And it's yours for free. Just go ahead and use that to maybe, it'll even give you some marching orders on how you can make some improvements there. So I'll leave a link to that down in the description. I hope you guys take us up on that.
Yeah, that's helping a lot of churches for sure. So next one I like because this can often be forgotten now because we have a lot of other things we're doing online, but your website is your lobby, basically. It's the new lobby. So what people need to understand is still about 80% of people will end up on a church's website before they visit. Even if they find you somewhere else online or whatever, they're still going to end up there. And in the age of social media and apps and everything else we have out there, I see sometimes churches really neglecting their website now. But the other thing that we just mentioned about Google, when someone looks for churches near me or churches in Austin, Texas or Honolulu or whatever, Google is actually looking to send the traffic from that search to your website first and foremost. There's a website button right next to the directions where they can go to your church. So still definitely the virtual front door, or as we're calling it here, the new lobby. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that this is where you make that real first impression, as people will see what you're about. The key here, I think, is having photography and video and media of all kinds of people that feel relatable when people get onto your website there. If they see people that look and feel like they could be friends with them, that's going to make your church feel attractive to them. So that's the kind of thing you want to have on your website, but that is their first impression. Yeah, you're right, Ian.
Yeah, that's good. So next one here would be your follow-up has to be more than just a mass email you're putting out there to people. So there's a lot of ways to follow up now. Yeah.
I see a lot of churches do this, is that they will collect contact information from a visitor, and then all that they do with it is put that on their weekly email list so that people get invites to events and they know what's happening at the church, which is something they really aren't even asking to be on if they've come for the first time there. Yeah. So a couple of tips I would say here. Number one is I'd say do anything in your power to pull forward the contact information receiving from visitors. And so the two primary ways I see churches doing that is with a plan your visit system. So something that someone can fill out on the site to let you know they're coming. And then what that does, it lets you contact them ahead of time and say, I really can't wait to meet you. Let's make sure we connect. I'll have a seat saved for you. It's going to be a great Sunday, and let's make sure we get to hang out a little bit. The other way is pre-registering your kids. So at most churches now, just because we really care about child safety, there's some pretty rigorous standards, at least at my church, on what we have to do to get someone checked in the children's ministry program. So if we can pull that forward, save them the 10 minutes or something it might take on Sunday morning and get that online, it also gives us an opportunity to contact them, connect with them, and start to engage a little bit. So I'd say that, and then it's really important that you have a well thought out visitor follow-up sequence that you walk people through. You can automate this with email. I don't always, maybe one or two of the messages. I think people can smell that though now. So I really recommend that you do some of that to be a little bit more personalized, a personalized text if you actually got to encounter the person.
Yeah.
I really love a handwritten card signed by the pastor, sent out in the mail. That's been really good for us too. So I recommend some of those kinds of things. In fact, we have a whole video. I'll leave a link to that here or up in the corner here. Where I outline my church's exact visitor follow-up sequence, and it includes a download link where you can steal everything that we say. It's kind of tried and true and tested. So I hope you guys will take us up on that. Watch that video if you haven't already.
We have a lot of people that steal those daily, and we're happy to help let them gleam from what we've done there. But this next one here, branding still matters more than you think. And what do we mean by this? Because branding's such a broad thing, isn't it, Thomas? I mean, I know that the first thing that most people think of there is logo and look and all of that, but it's we know just in our experience with church marketing, it goes much deeper than that. And why are we saying it still matters more than we think?
Yeah, so it still matters because the reality is that so many people are going to engage with you on so many different platforms. And if you're not consistent, then I think you miss the opportunity of feeling like you miss the opportunity of the familiarity you can build with a brand. So
yeah.
in what's going to happen is someone's going to see, maybe they'll encounter you on Instagram for the first time, and then they'll get onto your website. And if that looks the same, and then they get onto your YouTube and they watch one of your sermons and they notice that it's branded the same on YouTube, and they see that in when they drive by, they notice that same sign again out front that's branded the same and looks the same.
Yeah.
What that does is it kind of... there's this idea in marketing where we kind of have this thing where you need 7 touch points for someone to finally really recognize who you are and become familiar with you. And so if you do not have a consistent brand, like, and your website looks different from your Instagram, looks different from your signage out front of your building, looks different from your inside of your building and what people see on YouTube, those don't count towards that 7, I guess you could say, because they feel like a different experience every time and people don't build that familiarity. So building out your brand, and it's more like you were saying, it's more than your logo. It has to do obviously with logo and colors and typography and that consistent look and feel, but it's also even the language that you use and the things that you say about yourself and the way you communicate your vision and just being consistent with that. It will help to build familiarity and make people think of you when they get to that point when they're thinking of a church that they want to go visit or they need help. You want them to think of your church, and this is the way you do that, is by building your brand.
You covered most of it, and one and there's a lot more, but there was one thing that also came to my mind is catchphrases or slogans, or we've seen some really good ones out there and funny ones. I just, when you were talking about that, I remember we worked with a church and built them a website, and they knew their catchphrase and something that they were known for in their community that they were positioned in. They were in a rougher area, inner city area, and they were known as the church in the hood that will do you some good. So that was their catchphrase, and not the right one for every church, but most certainly memorable. And then and then we had another church that we worked with that in an area that was known for a lot of partying and bars, and their catchphrase was "Come tie one on" at the name of their church.
I still totally get that one, but that's all fine. Yeah, I know what it means, but it's
I guess instead of getting drunk on wine, going and being filled with the Holy Spirit. So tying Jesus, one on go. That way. So there you go. But again, catchphrases, taglines. And everything else you said there, Thomas. So other than that, visitors need to feel known and not just counted. You kind of talked about this in personal follow-up in our previous point. But, it's basically just people being really welcomed and seen and not just a number and a butt in a seat, right? Is what we're getting after here.
I'm dealing with this a lot in our church right now, and we're having a lot of conversations around this, but... good hosts or greeters or ushers, whatever you call them in your church, it is truly a spiritual gift. Like there's a reason why hospitality is on so many spiritual gift lists when you see them. I think that this truly is something that can impact someone's entire experience on a Sunday morning. And so we've been rethinking this quite a bit at our church, trying to think about what does that look like? How do we give someone just a over-the-top, great, hospitable experience? It can't just be someone that hands them a bulletin or takes them to a seat, but really engages with them, because that's what people are going to remember is how you made them feel when they first came. So, super important.
I did a video a while back about things you don't want your church greeting team doing or saying. I don't know if we want to include a link for that, Thomas, but it could at least be found in our YouTube, but things you don't want your greeters doing. And it also just, I chuckled because it reminded me of when we were talking about the first church that I attended, there was a greeter. It was the same guy every Sunday, but he looked like Frankenstein, bless his heart, and he didn't say a thing. But the church left him there just because he was the greeter, but he would just stare at you in the eye, give you a very hard handshake, and move you on. I think we've moved past that now, so for our greeting team and hospitality team. So
the opposite end of that, so I'll mention this. Like, you remember, you and I have been to this place. There's a restaurant in East Austin called One in a Millions.
Right? Yeah, I love it. Need to go again now.
famous for their breakfast tacos, but I'd say even more famous for the owner who's there every time I went there. And I don't know if it's still the case. I don't know when you were there last, but
it's been a while.
It's been a long time. It's been, I don't know, 10 years for me probably. But this guy won.
Too big for this now. Who knows?
One in a million. He gives the biggest handshake to every person that walks into the restaurant. And he's like, he's famous for it. There's a line out the door to this place. It helps that they have like these, you know, 2-pound breakfast tacos that they serve. But but the guy has this, he's famous for the way that he greets and hugs and loves and just is so, and it's, you know, sometimes we're worried, like, and this is the kind of person you have to find, is so many of us get worried about, oh, am I supposed to hug or handshake or, you know, what we're supposed to greet each other with a holy kiss. I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. Like, so this guy just goes for it. Like, he gives these handshakes and, you know, just he takes the lead and he's so hospitable and it's been the secret sauce to his restaurant for decades. And it's authentic.
I remember when this guy shook my hand and he really looked at me and said, hey, how we doing? And he was personal. It wasn't just a him doing it. So it's good. It has to be authentic. Good segue to this next one. Personal invitations still matter, but they've shifted a bit. What do we mean by that?
Well, so I think that certainly personal invitation of looking into a friend and saying, hey, you really ought to come to church with me. I think you'll really like it. That's still valuable. But they also have gone online in a lot of ways, I think, where, you know, just this last week, I think my I saw my wife, I'm on a text thread where someone, they were sharing about just how they were really going through a season and a health issue they have. My wife shared a clip from church that goes to that person, and it's you know, it may not have been a direct invite, you should come and hear the rest of this sermon or something like that, but it was just kind of a little, it's a little a prompting that she thought it would be an encouragement to this person, and it was. And that's the kind of thing we can share. And that is a personal invite. Here's what else it is. It's leaving a review, having people leave reviews on your church website. Those are personal invites, because if they see a friend on Google reviews saying, I really love this church, it's my church home, and they recognize that name, it's like, oh my goodness, John goes there. Well, you know, we probably should ask him about that and see what he thinks of that church and what that's about. So anyway, I think that personal invites have gone online. They can be shared social media or sermon clips or reviews. That's that works nowadays.
Yeah, another one that comes to mind too that I've, it's been around for a while, but I think it's still very relevant, is that if there is someone, whether or not they're unchurched or going through something really rough, and your pastor happens to preach a message that deals, addresses what they're dealing with, you can share that message with them. And that would be a great way. Not only do they hear what God's word has to say about their situation and are encouraged to draw closer to the Lord, they also get a feel for your pastor's preaching and may be inclined to come check you out. So another thing we've seen that's also a really cool thing to share digitally that's still very personal and invitational. So, and visitors now have more options than ever. What do we mean by that?
Well, so this is the reason why we're probably seeing people, like fewer people in some cases, come to your church. Is because there are so many options that people have to engage with the gospel and find the answers that they're needing. So gone are the days where if you like the days we were describing with your testimony in the beginning of this episode about you, like if you were looking for help on that kind of an issue today, you probably wouldn't start by walking into a Catholic church. You'd probably start the search online, and you'd probably engage with some kind of content online that would help you get those answers and find those answers. And so I think we as pastors have to come to this realization that there are much better preachers than me that people have access to at any given moment on of the day online, and that wasn't the case 20 years ago. So the idea that people come to my church or our church because I am the best teacher around or the best access they'll have to good Bible teaching or really good worship, just not true anymore. There's great worship online, there's great teaching online, and you get a lot of that. What is unique in the local experience is that we can be the best content and the best experience and the best encounter someone can have for our area. Like, you know, a guy on the other side of the country who's a great preacher doesn't have a word for the specific people that are sitting in your church, in your community. And that's where we really can shine there. So we have to realize that, though, is that people have these options online they didn't have before. And you need to understand that, like, that is a... whether we like it or not, that is a real way that people believe that they can have a spiritual encounter and grow as a Christian. Now, I'm not arguing the merits of that. I think that there is much more value in in-person, being part of a physical church that you are a part of on a regular basis. Like, that's important to me still. But that doesn't mean that other people don't disagree with that, especially people that don't have a Christian upbringing or don't have a faith background. They're just looking for answers, and they're going to find those online, and they have options to do that.
Yeah, no, that's right. It's very saturated now, if you will, is the word. So this last one I like, because I think this speaks to church health, and that's that your culture is the best follow-up tool. So your church's culture.
Yeah. I think you can't, you can't out-preach this. You can't out-worship this kind of stuff. It's... like, people are, we said this already, but people are going to leave your church feeling a certain way that, your sermon and your worship, that plays a part in it, those big elements, and they are important. I don't want to dismiss that. But, if they have a real encounter with real people and they feel connected with people, that's what helps people stay at churches. Like, the reality is people go to church with their friends. And there's nothing that you can do if people don't make real connections at your church. It's not a matter of if, it'll be when they will walk away. They will at some point walk away from things. It might be a few weeks, it might be a couple of years, but if they never make that connection with the culture and the people of your church, the odds of them sticking around, they eventually go to zero.
Yeah. No, that's good stuff. Yeah. And again, that's why I said what I did at the beginning. I think that is the sign of a healthy church. If you have a healthy culture, people are going to be engaged. You're not going to have to worry about how people are treated and try to outdo your church's culture by just great preaching and worship. It just doesn't work because they're going to be mixing it up with your people. So good stuff, Thomas.
I got a question for the Reach Right family out there. Let us know, what are you doing that maybe is different over the last 10 years or so that has driven maybe more people to engage with you? Is there anything that we didn't talk about here? I'd love to hear that down in the comments. Yep. Drop us something down there. We do, we're actually about to film an episode where we go through a mailbag of some of these kinds of comments and give feedback on what's what people are saying and try to answer some of those. So drop us a comment on what's working in your church or maybe what isn't working that we talked about here today. We'd love to talk more about it. Thanks, guys, for being part of the Reach Right family, and we'll see you next time.
See you.